The challenge, Hamden versus Rumsfeld, and the fight over presidential power. The challenge, Jonathan Mahler, seems to be, as Bill Russell puts it,
what do we do now?
What do we do with this?
Well,
this is one piece of a very big puzzle, a critical piece, critical.
Yeah. And we live in history. It's not back there. This makes it tangible in a way that I don't.
And you've thought about it in the bigger context. Yes, you wrote specifically about this event. But help us to go exploring into what do we do with it?
That's the job of the next president.
Well, it is the job of the next president,
absolutely,
which is why this is such a critical election.
I think some our agent.
That's right. I mean, certainly, I mean, one thing that I think absolutely needs to happen in the next administration, really, frankly, whomever wins, Congress has to restore itself to the role that it was designed to play in our constitutional government, which is as a check against the executive branch. It needs to reassert itself, and there needs to be a sense of institutional loyalty that has been replaced, frankly, by party loyalty. We have, separation of parties rather than separation of powers now. I mean, I think that's...
We thought we fixed this with Nixon.
Yes, we did not. We did not.
And if anything, we made him madder. It's sort of like pouring gasoline on the fire.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's, to me, that's the most important thing, is that Congress needs to sort of see its role differently. It needs to reassert itself. It needs to sort of reassert its authority.
That's a great line, separation of parties and not separation of power.
Yeah. That's, I think,
that's kind of scary, because that's exactly where the founding fathers were so worried about political parties.
That's right, yeah, that's right. So, I mean, to me, that's really the single most important thing that needs to be done. I mean, I think, you want to get into the specifics. I mean, look, I think either McCain or Obama, frankly, would close Guantanamo. I mean, we need to close Guantanamo. No one's, noted liberals like Condoleezza Rice are saying we need to close Guantanamo.
Noted liberals.
it's time to, that's
so why don't they do it?
To be done. Well, it's, it isn't, it will be done, but it's a.
But they've created a nightmare. Untangling this is going to be, because they've been holding people without charge for many, many years now.
That's right.
And they don't know what to do with them.
And you have people that you're going to have a hard time trying because of how you've treated them.
Oh, you mean
them.
Torture?
Yeah. I mean, what are you going to do with that? I mean, you look at a guy like Hamdan, just, returning to the book. I mean, one of the reasons why the administration chose him was that they believed that they had a clean case against him, that he hadn't been tortured. Well, as it turned out, I mean, relative to some of the other detainees, he hadn't been tortured as badly. However, on the very first day of his military tribunal, the judge, a military judge, threw out a whole litany of his confessions because they had, in fact, been coerced in his judgment. So, a guy who's supposed to be...
And the fact that they hadn't, as they say, rendered him, they hadn't taken him off and beaten him with a pipe in some secret prison.
Well, they hadn't had somebody else do it.
Right.
They
hadn't had someone else do it, exactly.
But they did have him in solitary confinement. They did all sorts of things that violate the Geneva Convention.
I was... torture, when we talk about waterboarding and a range of different things, your accounting, and you don't focus on it, but there's enough there, your accounting of what happens to this person by virtue of being isolated, separated, nothing predictable, any humane logic, all goes out the window. Right. From moment to moment, you don't know what, where, how much, or how often, and
or how long.
Frequently separated from any human contact.
That's right.
The psychological,
The
spiritual, the intellectual effects on a human being that endure the kinds of treatment that these people have treated. Before we get to the things we call torture, I found extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
I find them dehumanizing, and if they're not torture, they damn well ought to be at least considered under that rubric.
Right, right. Yeah. No,
well, the Geneva Conventions tried to address that.
Right, right. You're not supposed to be held in solitary confinement, and of course the administration, initially was argued that he was, that he was not entitled to that particular part of the Geneva Conventions. And or any part of the Geneva Conventions, for that matter, so that they could hold him in solitary confinement, and they did it. They also argued that it wasn't solitary confinement; it was pre-trial confinement that he was being held in solitary confinement in advance of his trial. But here you have a guy who basically, slowly goes mad. I mean, he goes, he goes
is
on,
driven mad.
Yeah, he is driven mad. He goes on hunger strikes. Is actually has to be force fed in a restraining chair. Who you know, fires his lawyers repeatedly, and who's you know, really kind of loses it.
And he's still in prison.
He's still there. Still there.
Well, and at least he's had a trial, sort of.
Yes.
And well, there's been a conclusion. Right. The question is, having served his sentence, what will happen to him? And this administration, at least, and a lot of its supporters act as if nothing will change. He will go back. Once he's served his sentence, he goes back to, you know, conceptually to Guantanamo, whether it's open or not.
Right.
And it's back into the same. I mean, Alice in Wonderland does not begin to approach.
Right.
It's sort of the dark version of this.
Yeah.
The just constant absurdity. And part of it is this administration. Everybody plays with words. But there's an Orwellian quality to the games that have gone on with this. This isn't torture. It's just it's torture by another name.
Right.
But since we don't call it torture, it's not really torture.
It's it's
right. And they're not, you know, they're not entitled to be covered under the Geneva Conventions because they're some other kind of human.
Right. Right.
Or non-human.
Right. Right. No. Right. There's the relevant part of the Geneva Conventions, in Common Article 3, it's known as, is. Its specific purpose was to define a baseline of protections for which any human being is entitled to, no matter what, who they are and what they've done.
In a civilized nation.
In a civilized nation.
And
it is as
unambiguous as they could make it.
That's right.
It had never been interpreted
this way before. Never until now. Yeah.
It's important to me that you...
May I say this is obscene? I'm serious. I mean, the manipulation... I'm semi-serious. The manipulation of language to do and to say and do things that are absolutely manifestly contradictory to the intent. I mean, it is literally Orwellian.
Yeah. Well, now you have the situation where, as you said before, the administration is reserving the right, if they want, to hold Hamdan after he served his sentence as an enemy combatant indefinitely. And if they do that, then and frankly, I think they're going to have a hard time doing it. I think they are going to let him go, because if they do that, they have spent 7 years making these military tribunals a reality, and the tribunal finally meets, is finally convened, is finally approved by the federal courts, which they were trying so hard to keep them out of, renders a verdict and a sentence, and they ignore that sentence. I mean, that's the very definition of a show trial. If you're going to ignore, I mean, that is communist Russia. I mean, that is a Soviet show trial. That, you know, if it's meaningless, I mean, if the sentence is going to be meaningless, I don't see how they can kind of go on at that point.
I found myself thinking, going back and wondering if we could adopt the Napoleonic Code. Because
right.
It seems that one of the real challenges of this, I'm only half kidding about that, one of the challenges in the English system under which we operate is the common law
and the
absolute importance of precedent.
Right.
It's not absolutely definitive, but it's very important.
Yeah.
And the precedents that we have been setting, really since the Cold War, particularly in the last 8 years, are really, really bad precedents.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the only way to undo a lot of that is with constitutional amendments, to clarify, you know, what has been rendered ambiguous by virtue of the common law, not by language,
right.
but by virtue of common law.
Yeah.
I'm not overstating this, am I?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean,
You can plead that you're a journalist, not a lawyer.
That is true. I am not a lawyer. I had to learn a lot of law to write this book, but we
are not lawyers. I mean, the law ultimately is about justice. It's not about legal. It's not about courts. It's not about lawyers.
Right. No.
It's about justice in the community. It's about the legitimacy of a form of government.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, this is
and it is
basic,
a form of government where the people are the sovereign.
That's
the
right.
President isn't. King, the people are sovereign, and justice is supposed to be at the heart of what we're talking about.
Yeah, you don't need to be a lawyer to understand the principles here. I mean, even one of my favorite moments is when Swift, Commander Swift, first goes down to see Hamdan, and here is the government has told Swift that he can't. That basically, he can meet with his client for the purposes of negotiating a guilty plea. So, in other words, you know. He's allowed to talk to his client as long as he's encouraging him to plead guilty.
Which is not typically a defense lawyer's position.
No, not their instinct. And so he goes down there and to Guantanamo for their first meeting, and, you know, into this cell walks a guy in a military uniform, And here's a guy in Hamdan who's been interrogated dozens of times by military officers, men in uniforms, and in walks this guy saying, "Oh, I'm here to help you. Here to help you. Well, you can trust me.
I'm from headquarters."
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And he says to Hamdan, "You know, I've been sent here by my government. They want you to plead guilty." And Hamdan says, "Well, to what?" And Swift says, "Well, we don't have any charges yet." So even Salim Hamdan, who has a fourth grade education and
out of Yemen,
less understanding of the American judicial system than my 4-year old son, sort of understood right there that wait a second,
there's a problem.
Plead guilty. But I don't even know what
I... Well, at that stage, I was thinking, I had images of kangaroos. I don't know what... kangaroos came to my head.
We'll be back in a moment. Kangaroos and otherwise with Jonathan Mahler, The Challenge, The Fight Over Presidential Power. Bill Russell, I, Paula Gordon, be with us. We'll be right back.